I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the needs of the people who help loved ones who are ill, disabled, or elderly. There's a conference coming up called Caring for the Caregivers. We'll talk about sources of stress and reservoirs of relief for people who take care of others. My guests are Carol Applegate, founder of Applegate Elder Law, and Peter Rosenberger, founder of Caregivers with Hope. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about an upcoming conference called Caring for the Caregiver. It's going to focus on the needs and challenges facing people who provide care for loved ones or others who are ill, disabled, elderly, just in need of some kind of support. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are here in the studio with me, Carol Applegate of Applegate Elder Law and its affiliate, The Voice of Aging. And joining us by phone is the event's keynote speaker, a radio host and author, Peter Rosenberg, who is also a full-time caregiver. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's good to have you both here. And I should say to our listeners that if you have not made your pledge of support to WFYI, we really would like for you to do that. If you want to keep programs like this one on the air and keep these kinds of discussions, this kind of forum on the air, you can do that by calling 1-800-233-0020 or going to wfyi.org/give. Well, I'm going to start. Tell me, Carol, a little bit about what this conference is, the logistics, if you could, please.
Yes, this conference is going to be held April 28th at the 502 East Event Center in Carmel, Indiana. It's beginning at 8:30 in the morning and going to 4 in the afternoon. So it's an all-day event. Lunch is included in your registration fee.
And how much was it? Would it cost to attend?
It's only $45, and that includes the entire day of morning panel, luncheon, a keynote speaker, and then afternoon sessions as well, breakout sessions.
And if people do want to reserve a spot, where would they go to do
that? They can either call my office, which is 317-522-1325. They can go on my website, which is applegateelderlaw.com, or thevoiceofaging.org. There's links to both places and ways to register right online.
Carol, real quickly then, what was sort of the genesis, the motivation behind doing conference?
I'm an elder law attorney, and mm-hmm. So when I would meet with families, basically, who were caring for a loved one, I would find that caregivers are so overwhelmed with all the questions that they need to get answered, the care that they need to get for their loved one. And I just felt, and I started this conference 3 years ago. The very first one was 3 years ago. Last year I had a conference with Dr. Nancy Snyderman there. And I just felt like caregivers were so eager for information and were so lost as to where to go. And so this conference was sort of developed to give them the answers that they needed. And also there's such an emotional part to all of this caregiving. And I felt caregivers needed some emotional support and to know that they weren't alone out there caring for their loved one. There's a lot of people in this world that are touched by this problem.
How large a crowd do you expect for this?
We're hoping our maximum is 400.
Okay.
And so we're hoping to get close to that. Absolutely.
Around 400?
We may, yes.
How many came the first year?
We had about 200, and
oh,
then
wow.
So we doubled it last year, and and we're just hoping to get. So it's important that they get their registrations in early so that they have a place, because we may not be able to accommodate much more than 400.
Peter, it sounds like you are with us now.
I am indeed. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Fine. Carol, it's been so long.
I know. Hi, Peter. How are you?
So I'm great. I'm great. And I'm just, thank you all for letting me come on the show and talk about this.
Oh, certainly. Glad to have you. So, if you would, talk to me, give us a little taste of what you're going to be talking about in your keynote.
With Donald Trump's hair. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to be talking about Donald Trump's hair. It's going to be huge. We're going to talk about how can caregivers live a healthy life? What does that look like? How do you help somebody who helps somebody? What do you say to the person pushing the wheelchair, to the person that is standing in the corner of the hospital room? How do you help that person doing laundry in the middle of the night, dealing with yet another crisis? The caregivers don't make good decisions when they're isolated and they're cut off from significant relationships and so forth. And this is why I'm so glad that Carol is doing this conference, because she's taking community to that isolation. She's punching through to say, here's how we can make some very good decisions and plan, because it's coming down the pike, and here's what it looks like to help a caregiver. And so these are the things we're going to delve into.
And Peter, I said that earlier, that caregivers feel so isolated and alone. And one of the reasons I had this care conference was to be able to make them feel like they're not alone anymore. There are other people facing those same dilemmas.
So a large part of this then is almost therapeutic in nature. It's to create a very large support group and a kind of network for
research. Network.
And, you know, while it may seem obvious to the two of you, because you live and work in that world all the time and deal with these problems. The other thing about caregivers is constantly there are new people moving into that role, often not by choice. Mm-hmm. they're draftees rather than, well, to some degree they're volunteers as well, but circumstances draft them into that role. How important is having that kind of support system for them? Peter, I'm going to start with you first, but I want to hear Carol's thoughts on it, too, afterwards.
Well, here's the deal for me. I was out snowmobiling a while back, and I like to do this, and I'm very good at it, but I was way in the backcountry of Montana, 10 miles from the house, and the house was 10 miles from the paved road, so we're in a pretty remote area. And I got off the trail because the wind was blowing so hard that we couldn't see. The trail got covered up, and we ended up missing a turn, and I'm out in a slope area, and I'm stuck. And even if I got the sled unstuck, I didn't know where the trail was. Mm-hmm. So I had to, it got a little bit, and the sun was going down, it was getting kind of cold, and it started getting a little bit dicey out there. And my son and I ran, and we found the marker on the trail. Then we were able to get the machine unstuck, got up to the safety part of the trail where the snow was more packed, and then we started our way down the mountain. Now, I wasn't thinking 5 miles down the road here. I was just thinking, I got to find the next marker where safety is. And that's the way it is for caregivers. We get so bombarded with things, we're stuck, but we don't even know where the trail is. So even if we got unstuck, where are we going? And that's what this conference is about. This is what I do through my stuff with my book and my radio show and so forth, is let's find the next marker, and let's find the next right thing to get you to safety, and then we'll start making healthier decisions from there. Because this is what is happening with caregivers all over the place. How's that sound to you, Carol?
That's right. And you know, you can't do it alone, Peter, as well. You know, you've got to have that team behind you. You've got to have those people that help you find that trail again. And that's what we try to do in my business, is to be able to talk about and start looking at all these options, because there's so many things out there that they're trying to deal with. And how do we narrow it down? How do we say, okay, this is what we do first, this is what we do second?
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the upcoming Caring for the Caregiver Conference. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So when you talk about finding the next marker or the safety markers, let's take a step back. Let's say, okay, what are the things someone who has just found herself or himself in the role of being a caregiver, What things does that person would be helpful for that person to know going into it that they that he or she may not be aware of? Peter, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I think once you get the diagnosis, and most people are like one phone call away from their life getting turned upside down, or a child born with special needs, or whatever. There's so many different things. In my case, I knew that my wife was hurt when I married her. She'd already had her wreck. I knew this. But I was still unprepared for this. I didn't understand how to financially navigate this thing. Carol and I talked about this a little bit on my show the other day, where the financial component of this thing, and it's not just paying the medical bills. Mm-hmm. It's juggling a job. It's making sure your credit doesn't go into the toilet because your spread's so thin. There's so many different components. Long-term care is going to become increasingly a big, big issue. And it's going to cripple most families. But then 90% of people want to age in their own home. So what do you do for that? Okay, well, you got to find somebody to come in and help you get your home ready for this. You know, how many people are very good at putting up handicap accessible bars and building a wheelchair ramp or putting an elevator in the home? So you got to find the right person for that, and you got to have good people around you. But the first thing you do is just sit down with an assessment and say, where are we? And I like that with Carol, but Carol, did you tell me that you made your law office, your conference room, to look more like a dining room?
Yes, I'm in an old home.
That.
And so we sit around
like
the
house.
Yeah.
Let's just sit around the kitchen table and see where we are. And you get a trained professional who lives in this world. You don't live in this world if you just got that phone call. But there are a lot of people that do, like Carol, and she does this every single day. She knows the right questions to ask. Don't feel overwhelmed that you got to somehow, like, go back to the snowmobile story. Don't feel like you got to go all the way to town. Let's just get to the next right step. Let's get an assessment of where we are. Let's figure out where's east, west, south, or north, and let's start taking some baby steps towards a healthy lifestyle.
Carol, your thoughts?
Yeah, and I've sort of developed my law firm around this concept of we just don't do crisis planning. In fact, we don't make good decisions when we're crisis planning because we're so emotionally involved. But, you know, I have social workers on my staff. I consult with nurses. I have a Medicare specialist. So we have a team of people on my staff that will sit down and work with these families to help them decide, you know, what do we need and what's the emergency right now? What do we have to do now? What do we do first, second, third, and fourth so that we can at least start planning? It's never too early to have these conversations. It's never too early to talk about some of these things and have a plan in mind, even though that plan may change overnight or in the instance of a phone call or whatever. You at least have had some conversation. You've at least talked about it. You've at least thought about it. And that's important.
How did you decide to make this a focus of your law practice?
Well, I was a nurse before I became an attorney. And so I look at my clients much differently. I think my nursing background, my nursing training pops up. And I look at my clients very holistic. And I don't just look at where they need to go today, but I look at their family relationships, their family dynamics, their physical condition, where they think they might be in the future. All those things. So I look at it in a much more a holistic approach.
And I will promise I will bring us back to Tom, but I'm always curious about people who make interesting life choices like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a nurse, you know, it seems like there are all sorts of ways you could have gone further into medicine, but you decided
to go into law,
to pursue the law instead. Why was that?
It was always a personal, very personal goal of mine. And just, I don't know. That's just where I was led in my life to go this direction. I've also cared for both of my parents. And I think that, you know, I'm a nurse, I'm an attorney, I'm a daughter, and I'm also a mother. And so it has given me a good perspective on some of these life issues that we have to face as we age.
What, you know, when you sit down to have the conversation with these folks for the first time, how do you try to structure that conversation?
I try to find out as much about them as I can, about them as a person. Where do they work? Where do they live? What are their goals? What do they want to leave as their legacy? A lot of things that have nothing to do with law, but it gets to know them as a person and their family as a family, and try to then determine where do we go from here.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about caring for the people who provide care. There's a new conference coming up in about a week and a half called Caring for the Caregiver in Carmel. My guests are one of the organizers, Carol Applegate of the Applegate Elder Law Firm, and Peter Rosenberger, who is going to be the keynote speaker. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about taking care of the people who take care of others. There is a new conference that's going to be in Carmel in about a week and a half called Caring for the Caregiver. My guests are one of the event's organizers, or the event's organizer, actually, I should say, and founder, Carol Applegate of Applegate Elder Law and its affiliate, The Voice of Aging. And joining us by phone is the event's keynote speaker, radio host, and author, Peter Rosenberger, who's also a full-time caregiver. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Tim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad you're having this discussion, and I really wanted to thank the gentleman for what he said about working. I have a son that has autism, and I have a horrendous time trying to keep a job. I've lost several jobs because I'm a single parent, and when my son has, they call me from school, he's having a meltdown, something's going wrong, I'm at work, what do I do? I have no one there. It put a deep depression on me, because as a man, you want to earn more, to do more for your son and your family, and that dynamic of it, and I'm not able to. So it puts me in a situation I feel less than. I think this conference may be good for even couples or families that have that, because if you're in a couple and something happens to your mate or the family member taking care of them, what do the other people do? I mean, you have to have something set in place. I was very fortunate and blessed that my wife set me up with family and friends that helped me a lot. So when I'm down, I have them to go to, which is very, very important. You just being a single parent or a parent of someone you have to take care of 24 hours a day can just wear you to no end, where your batteries are just on low. You have to do something that keeps your batteries charged in order for you to take care of them. And I have to learn how to go out and be more social, make the time to do things that I do, because my son doesn't talk. Mm-hmm. So I don't have anyone to keep my social skills going. So, I mean, I think this is a very good thing. I'm going to try my best to go to the conference, and I really appreciate the lady that founded it. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Tim, and for sharing your story. Really appreciate it. Well,
John, can I address
please.
Some things that Tim talked about?
Sure.
First off, Tim, I know you still listen there, so I appreciate the call in, because that is, you represent the heart of what I'm trying to do. People don't understand, when you have a child with special needs, for example, it's not something you can hold your breath through and we'll just get through this until they get better or get worse. It's a life sentence for that family, for that parent, single parents or whatever, and the divorce rate in couples with a disability in the family, not necessarily with each other, is almost 90%. And 47% of all the caregivers out there are in the workforce. And this is going to be an increasingly more difficult problem for our society with flex schedules and all these kinds of things that are going to have to enter into play. It affects the coworkers. It affects every part of it. And I want to circle back around to what Carol said when she sits down with the individuals and gets to know them personally. See, the task of caregiving, we can train people to do that. You know, it's not that hard to give an injection. It's not that hard to learn how to do laundry, even though some guys, for whatever reason, just don't want to do it. But those are just tasks of caregiving. The the heart dynamics of caregiving is what's so important. And that's why I love what Carol does, is that she spends the time with people just to get to know them as a person and engage them. You can't hold your breath and do this. Tim needs a lot of help, but he doesn't know how to ask for that help sometimes, which is the case of so many people. That's why I love having a social worker there involved, like what Carol's got there, because you sit down and you look at the entire circle of that person's life and say, okay, how do I approach this? A lot of people don't have family members that want to help. They got family members, but the family members don't want to help because there's a lot of dynamics going on there. You need a trained professional to help you navigate through that quagmire. A lot of folks are in church, but they don't feel like asking their pastors or whatever to help because they feel embarrassed or feel like they're putting on or whatever. There's a path to be able to ask for that kind of help so that you do have a widening circle of people who can go to help Tim with his son until Tim can get off work. That's the kind of thing that you got to sit down and have a conversation with people that are objective, they got good heads on their shoulders, and can give practical tools on how to ask for help, how to manage that help. So because the goal is, if Tim goes down, what happens to his son? That's the question.
Yeah, and Tim's story and your comments, Peter, sort of amplify the next direction I wanted to go with my questioning, which is you've both sort of illustrated, this is a problem that is going to just keep expanding. I mean, the actuarial tables indicate that if you make it to, 60, you've got a better than even chance of making it all the way to 90 or even 100. And that suggests that there's going to have to be a whole lot more caregiving in the future. Yeah. What kinds of things as a society, as a culture, as a series of workplaces do we need to be making right now? What kind of accommodations, adjustments? Because this is a reality, and it's a reality that's coming to us fast. Carol.
Well, I just had a client come in this week who had to take family leave just to care for her father, just in an interim period of time where he's already in a facility, but he needs to move to a different facility. And she's, she had to almost quit her job or take family leave so that she could go in and sit with him. And so it's, and what is happening is that, our elderly population is growing just unsurmountable. And our caregiving ratios to those who need that care is going down. And so caregivers are going to be called upon in the future so much more to care for these family members, and it's going to be much more complicated. We know that, their medical stays in hospitals are shortened. We go in for hip replacement and we're out the next day. And so these caregivers are going to be hit with some very difficult questions, medical questions, end-of-life decisions, just am I doing this right? Financial is a big problem. Where am I going to get the money to pay for all of this? And so we're going to see that responsibility on the caregiver just grow and grow and grow.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about caring for the caregiver. There's a conference that goes by that name that's coming up in about a week and a half in Carmel. We're talking really about how do we take care of the people who take care of others. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. We've got a comment from a listener who did not want to go on the air, called in, and she said she has a father who is a veteran and wanted to share some information about a program that helped him out. The name of the program is Aid and Attendance, and it is a wartime pension for those who have served. It also helps with at-home care. For more information, anyone can call 877-294-6380. Mm-hmm. You're nodding your head here, Carol.
I'm assuming you're familiar with that program.
So yes. Could you talk about it a little more?
That is for veterans and their spouses. So if the veteran is deceased and he's left a widow or a widower, they could be eligible for this benefit. As all public benefits are going in the future, we're seeing that qualify for those benefits is becoming more and more difficult. So it is so important to start with that process early. And so, and to meet with someone like myself who can sit down and tell you what those requirements are to be eligible for that benefit. They're a wonderful benefit. My mother is on that benefit. My dad was in the Navy, and so that's helping pay for her assisted living facility. And so it can be very helpful with the financial piece of all of this, but there are, it is, does have some requirements, some qualifications that you have to meet to be eligible, and you need a professional person to help you through that.
And what when you say that there's some requirements about how it should be spent, presumably, though, you don't get to take the check and just go to Vegas something like that, that it is to be directed towards certain kinds of services.
It is to be used to help pay for your care when you need that. So that's why it's important that you need care, number one, and you're financially unable to provide for yourself to be eligible for that benefit.
And what sort of care would it?
The requirement is that you have to have some, need some assistance in two activities of daily living. So, you know, bathing, toileting, and feeding, and those kinds of things. So you need a doctor's report stating that you do need some care. But that can be provided in-home. It can be provided in assisted living facilities. It can be provided in long-term care facilities as well.
We've gotten a question about really what sort of legal status caregivers need. They need durable power of attorney, medical POA. What else?
You need those legal documents in place right away. So that's one of the very first things. When my clients come into my office, we sort of look at a snapshot. What are your legal documents? What's your financial situation? What's your care needs? You need a power of attorney. That's a very important document. You need a health care representative. You need to determine whether or not you want a living will. You need a HIPAA release, which is a release of information form. You need a will or a trust, something to do to help determine where your assets are going to go upon your death. So those legal documents are so important right away to determine whether or not you have those.
Peter, you have these kinds of conversations with people all the time, obviously. What are the things when you are talking with caregivers who are feeling stressed out or overwhelmed? What are the things that they identify with you as their greatest challenges or the things that they need the most from others?
Well, what they identify with and what their challenges actually are cannot always be the same. Sometimes they tell you what they want, but they don't know necessarily what they need. And so you've got a lot of layers of this thing. The biggest thing with caregivers I have found is that they lose their identity. They become wrapped up in the story of someone else. They can't speak in first person singular. They can't, they speak in first person plural or first person, third person singular. Ask a caregiver, how you doing? Well, we just got home from the hospital, or mama had a bad night, or she's not doing too well. They have a very hard time articulating from their own heart what's going on with them. And when they do, that's when the tears and the stammering starts. And that's the first step I do when I talk to caregivers, is just to get them to express in their own voice what's going on with them. I'm hurt. I'm tired. I'm frustrated. I'm just hacked off. I'm depressed or whatever. I don't care what comes after the word I. That's an honest word at that point, because now they're expressing their heart. It's hard to get people to make healthy choices if they're not in a healthy place mentally, emotionally. And so you have to kind of slow walk people back from the cliff. A little bit, and you got to be gentle with them. I mean, there's a PTSD element going on with a lot of caregivers. Mm-hmm. I've spent a lot of time with wounded warriors and their caregivers. So you got the wounded warrior that's dealing with PTSD, but then you got a caregiver that wakes up in the middle of the night, and there's her, you know, her husband or his wife, and they got a loaded 45, mm-hmm. and so there's a heightened sense of vigilance that has to go on. It's very hard to detox from that.
And one of the
there's so many dynamics.
Yeah, and one of the questions I always ask my clients is, okay, you've told me how mom and dad are doing. How are you doing as a caregiver? Or if it's a spouse, you know, how are you doing? Because they don't want to talk about it.
That's the answer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they don't know what to say.
Well, let me ask this then, because it sounds to me like there are a couple of things. There's obviously the stress of that experience, but if you're burying your identity almost exclusively into someone else's existence like that, And let's assume that it's an elderly parent or someone else who might not have a long life expectancy. What happens to that caregiver when, in effect, the mission ends? You know, when the person for whom they have been providing the care is no longer living. Peter, I'm going to start with you on that.
Well, I think that goes back to what Carol said about having a plan. You need to have an exit strategy for this thing, too.
Well, I'm asking emotionally, though. What happens to them?
Emotionally, they're floundering. They flounder. They don't know how to function. A lot of times, and Carol backed me up on this, they've taken their eye off the ball and taken care of this loved one so long, then the loved one dies, and then they turn around and their business is bankrupt or they're unemployed or they were thinking this was going to go on for a little bit of time. It went on longer than they expected, and now they're depleted, and they don't even know where to begin. And so now you got to start over in some respects with that, or their family's split up because of this. Their relationships are fractured. So, again, it's that slow walk back towards a healthy lifestyle. And you didn't get here overnight. You're not going to get out of it overnight. It takes some time. It takes a lot of work. There's no magic bullet. Anybody that promises you one will lie about other things, too. It's just hard work. But it's smart work, and you don't have it all in one day, okay? It's progress, not perfection. So what we're going to do is just help them start thinking and asking better questions so that when you get off track and you have something to help get you back on safe footing, and that's the way it is even after your loved one dies.
Peter, how do you start that process of reentry with them, though? I mean, because in some ways that's what it is. They're reengaging with a larger life.
Well, I recommend two things for every caregiver. I recommend a minimum of one counseling session a month with some type of mental health professional right now. Don't wait until your loved one is better or worse. Do it now and start having these kinds of dialogues. And then I recommend support groups for almost every type of injury or illness or something. There's some type of support group, and there's a couple of catch-all support groups. Just go and just listen to other people who have navigated through this thing and start pushing yourself. And I remember somebody asked me the other day, how do you find time for this? I don't find time for this, John. I make time for this. I'm not going to help my wife or my kids or anybody else if I turn into a husk of a person. So I've got to push myself to make healthy decisions for me.
And
sound harsh, and I don't mean it harsh, but they may not make it, but I have to.
Right.
Yeah.
And in my office, along when we first sit down and we go through, I do what I call life care planning. And this is a part of our planning, not just planning for while we're all here and alive, but what happens when one of us are gone. And so it's not always easy to talk about those kinds of things. But I'm thinking of several clients that said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when mom's gone. I have to start thinking and reevaluating my value system and what I'm going to do when she is gone. And so we've already talked about that. We've already thought about that. We've already put that into her care plan so that she sort of can be starting to deal with this as we go through it.
The things Peter was talking about, how, you know, you get so locked up into taking care of this person that you can let other things like your work or
all those
portfolio,
things.
All of that. How do you advise people to keep some sort of focus on those other matters as well while all of this is going on?
I think it's, and Peter, you may have some better idea, but, you know, you've got, I guess I think about this conference. Everyone says, I can't take the time out of my busy life. I've got all these things going to go to this conference. Well, sometimes you can't afford not to do and go to things like this that will help you get through this whole process.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Caring for the Caregiver Conference, which will occur in about a week and a half. My guests are Carol Applegate of Applegate Elder Law and its affiliate, The Voice of Aging. And joining us by phone is the event's keynote speaker, radio host, and author Peter Rosenberg, who's also a full-time caregiver. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881 or shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the Caring for the Caregiver Conference. It's going to occur in about a week and a half. My guests are Carol Applegate of Applegate Elder Law and its affiliate, The Voice of Aging. She is the founder of the conference. And joining us by phone is the event's keynote speaker, radio host, and author, Peter Rosenberger, who is also a full-time caregiver. We've gotten a question from an email from a listener, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. This is from a listener named Deborah. She says, I cared for both of my parents for the last 5 years of their life. I know the physical, mental, and emotional cost to the caregiver. I sat by my mother as she died. I placed my father in a memory care unit while I was being treated for cancer. All the decisions and legal work had been done well in advance. I have no husband, no child, no living sibling. I have all the legal bases covered. But there is no one that cares about me enough to care for me as I cared for my parents. I am terrified to grow old and need help. Carol, I'll start with you. None of the easy questions come your way, do they?
No, these are very difficult questions. How do I answer that? I think that this conference will put you in touch with others and will help you find where you can maybe have that support that you need. We all need to reach out to others before others reach out to us. So this is a way in which, I've even had caregivers say, well, I don't need to come this year because I lost my mom or I lost my dad. Well, come for yourself and for you reaching out. You can contribute to somebody else who is just beginning that process of caregiving. And you might be able to give to them something that you learned. And in turn, you're going to get a lot back from that, I think.
Peter, that part of the sense of isolation you were talking about, too?
And in this case, she's got emotional, familial, and all types of isolation going on. But let me just tell her one quick thing. Mm-hmm. The most important relationship you will ever have is the person you are with the most, and that's yourself. So if she's in a healthy place emotionally for herself, whether or not she's got a throng of family members or friends around her, and I know it's terrifying, but we don't need to live in the wreckage of our future right now. We're not going to worry about things that are going to happen, that we're going to plan for it, okay? She's not going to go out and start having a massive family because she doesn't have one. So she's going to have to deal with where she is. But that's when you sit down with Carol. That's when you sit down at an event like this and say, okay, let's at least address the things that we can, which is the financial implications of being by yourself and not having someone to care for you. There are things that you can do right now. Long-term care insurance and all kinds of stuff. There are all kinds of things you can set in motion so physically and financially you can be taken care of. So once we click those boxes, then we'll start on building those solid relationship friends and loved ones around her so that she's not isolated emotionally as well. But if you can't fix all these things at one time. You just got to start taking baby steps. But let's just focus on the relationship she has with herself. Get into a good place with yourself. Don't sit there and beat yourself up that you don't have these things or even have a pity party that you don't have it. Let's take the proactive steps that we can do today and put our heads down on the pillow knowing that we did the best we could today and then tomorrow we'll deal with tomorrow.
We've also heard from a listener named Diane via Facebook, and if you'd like to reach out to us by Facebook, you can find us at No Limits, WFYI. Diane says, I wanted to know if the issue of Social Security disability will be addressed at the conference. I currently have my mom living with me, who I care for, who has breast lung cancer. Unfortunately, my husband was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I am confused by the whole disability issue, and I'm worried about accommodations I may have to make to my house. This is very stressful.
In the afternoon, we have 15 small table discussions, okay, of various subjects. One is, just to give you an idea, one is just on pets. Do I get a pet? Is pets good from the home and so forth? Another one's going to be a legal table where we're going to have an expert at each single table, that, and it's going to be small group discussions so that this caregiver can ask her specific questions. So one of our tables is going to be a legal question. So if she has some burning questions about Social Security disability, she will be able to ask the expert at that table and get those individual questions answered on in a much smaller setting.
Peter, and this gets to the kind of things you have been talking about, the caregiver having to take care of herself or himself in this case. In Diane's case here, it sounds like she already was in a caregiver role with her mother, and her story sort of illustrates just because you're a caregiver in one situation, it doesn't, you know, you're not limited one to a customer here. It could be that you're going to be dragged into a position where you're caring for more people than that. A, what are the differences that come with caring for more people? How do you make those kinds of emotional adjustments to doing that? Because I mean, you can tell Diane feels like she the entire world and a good part of the universe just fell onto her shoulders right now, and she's obviously working very hard to cope with that, but it is, as she says, it's very, very stressful. And I'd like to hear Carol's thoughts after you.
It is stressful. This is a heartbreaking reality for so many people. This is why I'm on a mission for this. I mean, I've been a caregiver for 30 years. Go out and look at me. This is what it did to me. Don't let this happen to you. And I have a head full of, well, I call it gray hair, but a buddy of mine calls it Arctic blonde. And it just did it to me long before I deserved it. But it's a hard, hard thing to put yourself between a vulnerable loved one and disaster, and then you get somebody else that comes into the picture. You know, here's a word I want to throw out. It's called stewardship. Now, obviously, it's not a word that's prevalent in our society because we're $20 trillion in debt. Mm-hmm. And that's something we as a society can do, and I would recommend this to everybody, is to talk to all your public officials and get them to work on balancing this budget, because it's going to be mighty hard for our country to address the needs of people if we're swimming in debt. And we've not been very good stewards of our country here. So, but let's bring it down to her level. You have to be a good steward of yourself. You can run around like a chicken with your head cut off and try to be all things to all people and help everybody else to do this. And how long can you do this? How long can your wallet, your heart, your job? You've heard it from Tim earlier of how many times he's lost his job dealing with the challenges of somebody with autism. And I'm going to have a lady on my show this week who deals with this whole chapter here in Middle Tennessee, where I am in Nashville, and just the heartbreaking reality of just that one particular disease of autism. How long can you do this? And my answer to you is, I bet you can't do it very long. Now, I've been doing it 30 years, and I learned the hard way that you're going to have to pace yourself, and you're going to have to learn to use a very simple word, but it is a complete sentence. And that word is no. Mm-hmm. No is a complete sentence. It's okay to have boundaries. You're not rejecting them. You're protecting the one asset that can help them. And that's a hard thing for caregivers to wrap their mind around, because we feel so guilty if we don't rush recklessly into a burning building. But I know a lot of folks in the emergency response thing, and I've never seen any of them that just runs in recklessly. They have the right gear on. They know how to do this. They're trained for this. So you can't just run into this thing and think somehow you're going to get unscathed. You're going to have to put on the right gear. You're going to have to take the right steps. This is what Carol's going to help people do at this conference, to learn how to organize yourself so that you can better help them. They're not going to be able to put all these kind of demands on you and just suck it out of you until there's nothing left, and then somehow think that this is going to be better for them. But when they're in that kind of need, when you have loved ones who are hurting that bad or in that kind of need, they can't always see that. They're just feeling the need, and they're going to pull on whoever's next to you. Think about lifeguards. How do they train a lifeguard to save somebody? Do you just jump in there and just, you know, hope for the best? Or do you have a plan, and you make sure you protect yourself so that person doesn't pull you down with them? And that is exactly what will happen if caregivers don't think this thing through. And this is what I'm trying to help them do, one weary heart and one step at a time.
Carol.
And I think, too, caregivers think they should have all the answers, they should know how to do it, and they should do it all themselves. And that's so wrong. We don't have all the I do this every single day, and I don't have every single question, answers to every question that somebody comes in the office with. So, you know, you need that team around you. You need those experts. You need those people who can help you through this process and who can sit down with you and help you figure it all out. We can't do it alone, and we need help from our community and everybody around us. So first of all, realize I don't have all the answers, and I can't do it alone.
Carol, let's assume that obviously a good sort of overarching step is to come to this conference.
Mm-hmm.
But let's assume, what are some practical steps that people who have found themselves in the role of being caregiver can do to take care of themselves, to get the support that they need? I mean, our little mental health breaks, like saying, you know, one night a week, I'm just going to go out and see a movie, or, you know, I'm going to create a little bit of time to have a cup of coffee or a glass of wine all by myself, and that's going to be my time. Are there people they should call for help? Are there organizations they can reach out to get the help they need?
Yeah, there's a lot in my office. I have a whole list of different organizations, different people, different counselors that you might need that we could connect you with so that you have that. And I think some of the statistics say that caregivers need to have not just an hour here and there, but a full day, full 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours away from the situation that to make it really meaningful for them.
What are some of those organizations?
Well, there's the Alzheimer's Association. You know, there's I should mention Joy's House. Joy's House is for it's an adult daycare center. And so they do some respite. They just do a wonderful job. In fact, I give a lot of my proceeds. If I make any proceeds from this conference, it goes to Joy's House to help them with their work. And they have got wonderful people on their staff, and they can say, you know, caregivers need a day off. Bring your loved one here. Let's take care of them here for the day so you can go out and do shopping, that you can go out and go to the show. You can go, you know, to church by yourself. Whatever they need. So Joy's House is a wonderful organization to help you do that. And there's other people that can that I can connect them with as well in the community.
Peter, same question to you. What are some practical steps people can do if they're in this
situation? Let's start with the health of a caregiver. I mean, the physical health. 72% of caregivers, now there's 65-plus million of us taking care of vulnerable loved ones. So that's in the 40 million range. 72% do not even see their own doctor regularly. Okay, so the sickest among us are being helped by people who don't see their own doctor regularly. Now, that's a time bomb waiting to happen. So I recommend, here's three easy numbers everybody can remember. 1, 2, 30. Just remember those three numbers. 1, 2, 30. 1, get a flu shot every year. I know, John, everybody says that the government is tagging us for alien invasion. But if the Klingons come, I don't want the flu. I don't want to be bull hugging. I don't want to be doing it. I can't eliminate the risk of the flu, but I can minimize the risk of it. Get the flu shot. 2 well visits a year. 1 annual physical, and 6 months later, just to get blood work and get eyeballs on you from your personal physician. Okay? And people say, well, I don't have insurance. It's not as expensive as you think. And you know what? You can't afford to not do this. And if you don't take time for this, you're going to have to make time for illness. And then 30 minutes a day of something physical. Go for a walk. Do some yard work. Just go out and do something. I do martial arts. They gave me my new name once I got my black belt was Show Nuff. That's funny, by the way. And, you know, I do something. I was there last night. And, I mean, I get thrown around. I have to do flips and so forth. And I come home and I feel my 52 years. But that's okay. I'm pushing myself physically, and I'll probably go out for a walk here later on today. Just something to get the blood going. 1, 2, 30. Those are things that you can do right now as a caregiver. The first thing I ask a caregiver when I see somebody stressed out and they've got their hair looks like Bernie Sanders on a bad day, I ask them, when's the last time you saw your doctor? And they give me all kinds of reasons why they can't. Call your pastor and say, you know what, I need somebody to sit with my loved one while I go see my doctor, or these organizations that Carol made. And if your pastor won't help you with that, find a different church, because that's what we got to do as caregivers. It's practical stuff. It's not feel good and hearts and rainbows and unicorns. It is practical stuff of what we can do as a caregiver today. It's not going to break the bank, and it's something we can do right now to start getting healthy, because healthy caregivers make better caregivers.
I'm hearing a refrain from both of you here, too, is that a large part of this to taking care of yourself as a caregiver is learning how to ask for help. And it sounds like that is a huge sort of obstacle to this process. We've got just a couple of minutes left. Peter, I'm going to throw it to you first, but how do you encourage people to get past that, it sounds like, reluctance to say, I need help?
Well, we feel guilty if we ask for help because this is our responsibility. And I've just got a simple question. If you don't feel comfortable asking help, let me ask you a simple question. Who's next in line to take care of your loved one when you go down? Because if you try to muscle your way through this and white knuckle it, it's only a matter of time. Again, if anybody else told you that, you don't have to listen to it. But when a 30-year caregiver tells you that, you might want to listen, because I have made every kind of mistake that you can make. I have forgotten more mistakes, John, than most people are going to make. I mean, it's just that's just the journey I've had. And I everything I've learned through failure. And I've learned that I have to ask for help. Somebody asked me this the other day, John. You get a big charge on this. They said, what would Jesus do as a caregiver? And I thought that was kind of an interesting question. And my first response was, well, he'd delegate. Because remember the whole story of the crucifixion? He's hanging on the cross. He said, John, here's your mama. Yeah. Take care. Now, I'm from the South, so I talk like that. This is how I really talk, y'all. But he, think about it. That's exactly what happened. Hey, here's mom. Take care of mom. I'm up here dying for the sins of the whole world. Take care of mom. Mm-hmm. Well, if Jesus could do that, you know what? We can do. So let's delegate our things out here. We don't have to go out and just dump it on people, but we can specifically ask for things and learn what help looks like. And the other thing is, for non-caregivers to help people, here's what it looks like. Don't say, let me know if there's something I can do. Say, hey, I got a guy that cleans gutters. Can I send him over to your house? I'll pay for it. You know, nobody thinks it's a good idea to have a caregiver up on the roof cleaning gutters. Yeah. Or, hey, I'm at the grocery store. Can I bring you over some milk?
Let me give Carol a chance to jump in here too, real quick.
Yeah, and I think we also have to learn how to be a good caregiver. In our morning session, I've got Dr. Bustani from the Eskenazi Brain Center that's going to be. He has his own a course that talks about, you know, how do I take care of myself and how do I become a good caregiver. And he's going to talk about what does stress do to our brain. And how can we relieve our stress so we're going to be healthy in the future?
And real quickly, in about 10 seconds, if people want more information on the conference, where do they go?
Call my number, 522-1325.
I'd like to thank my guests, Carol Applegate and Peter Rosenberger, for what has been a fascinating conversation. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.